Clay, when this episode, The Next Generation of Star Trek Picard's third season opened, and I saw Beverly Crusher standing over a wounded alien that she had clipped with a plasma rifle, and then she just summarily executed the motherfucker, I knew that Star Trek was back, baby.
Star Trek is back. Star Trek, punch it.
Even with a kill shot, as Riker called it. You know, I was thinking about that joke, and then as the episode is going on, and then they actually bring it up later on, like Riker and Picard talk about it, interestingly. So I'll still have something to say, but I guess it lost a little bit of the impact because the show does clearly seem to recognize that she killed someone. Although Picard does do a little bit of backflip there to say it was a defensive shot. when you're standing over someone that's begging for their life and you execute them, I actually
like that bit in the scene because Riker's like, she executed him pretty, and it seems like this is an execution, and he's like, I don't know, I'm sure it was defense, and Riker's just kind of like, I don't know, man.
That was the second best investigation scene after the fuck scene in The Wire, where McNulty and Bunk are just going fuck.
I like the end of it when Riker's just like manhandling the ashes of the dead alien, going like, well, have you ever seen ashes like this before?
If nothing else, I am going to recut that Wire scene over the audio of the Wire scene over this sequence of Picard. Just fuck. So this is Picard season 3. We are here with The Next Generation. It's the first episode of the third season. Came out on February 16th, 2023. Written by Terry Metalis, and directed by Doug.
Where's he from? What planet's he from?
I think he comes from the distant unknown world of Metalis. Directed by Doug Arniakoski, who's been on the show forever. In this episode called The Next Generation, after receiving a cryptic urgent distress call from Dr. Beverly Crusher, Admiral Jean-Luc Picard enlists help from generations old and new to embark on one final adventure, a daring mission that will change Starfleet and his old crew forever. So, how do you feel about getting back into Star Trek Picard, Clay? Not just about this episode, just in general.
Just in general. Yeah. The thing I'll say, the way that I feel about it is that I feel like the show understands how a lot of people will feel about it, and boy, do they go out of their way to make sure they this is a different show. Mm. They jettisoned the entire opening credits. They rely heavily, heavily on music from the old show. The only character to return is Rafi. And Laris too, but
I thought she was dead. If you had bet me money, I would have said Laris died for some reason at the end of the second season. I was shocked to see her.
But you know, over the closing credits, it's all classic music and they legitimately use, I think it's the theme from First Contact,
yes,
as well as the original theme, and all the graphics are retro TNG inspired graphics and stuff. And I actually really liked the credit sequence. I thought it was cool.
Yep.
But yeah, man, they are
moving on.
So my overall impression of this episode is I'm kind of two minds about it because I actually liked it. I thought it was tonally, I liked it, and there's a lot of stuff I liked about it. But I feel like they're trying a bit too hard with the reset button. And also it's very weird to see a tone that I like shot like an episode of Discovery where it just apparently in the 25th century nobody has lights, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's so dark. Like everything is so dark.
Yeah.
So that's a little jarring to see those two things kind of clashing, but overall I thought it was a pretty good start.
Would you say it's the tone of the show, or would you say it's just Frakes, really? Because I was going to say that like the brightest light that they have in the show is Frakes' performance, because it's the only thing that has like a little bit of glow to it. Like, I was less than impressed with this one, actually. Like, the way that I would praise this is to say that this is better than seasons 1 and 2 so far. But
yes.
That's like the bar there is so low that you can't even trip over it. It's just like on the ground.
Yeah.
And so we've also always kind of liked the first episode of the first seasons.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And
I go ahead.
Well, the only thing about this is that like there are two things going on in this, I think. Like, so one is there's an incredible amount of Easter egging going on. Mm-hmm. And two is that I only see the flaws of how this is going to fail as we move into the season. Like, I see all the same things that the old seasons did, except they have not fucked it up yet in this first episode. I thought it was remarkably similar to the first and second season of these shows. It's just that Frakes brings a different kind of energy to it that is like unique to the Picard series.
Yeah.
And is kind of like happy to be there. And the fact that the show went out of its way to reference old stuff. Like, you, and I'm so cynical about it, but even like, so, like the endless amount of references just kind of makes you think about the old show. And so it's hard to avoid that, but I we'll get into it. But I definitely see that this is the same show as what has come before it, and I'm not going to be surprised by what happens, I don't think.
Well, I thought there was one other bright spot that I think does actually separate it from the other two seasons, and mm-hmm. that's Captain Shaw. I really liked him. I thought he was great.
Yes, great performance.
Yeah, and I actually think he's positioned well as a character mm-hmm. because he is the antagonist, but his antagonism is based in the fact that he's just doing his job. Like he's not going to give his ship over to these two crazy old guys, and it's I like that. By they found a way to make him an antagonist without making him a villain, which I liked.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say I also like that it was a bit of an inversion of the TNG crazy admiral trope, where every time an admiral comes onto the ship, he tries to take the ship over, and they have to stop him. And it's like, oh, that's what they're doing, but it's Picard that's trying to take the ship over.
Yeah, yeah, they do invert it. I like Shaw too, and I think in a better, I'm going to be very prejudicial about this. Like, I don't think that it's going to pay off. I see him, he's going to match the Discovery Admiral from wherever they jumped into the future thing.
Mm-hmm.
So here's my, Shaw's a good example about the focal point that I see is like the good and the bad. The good is that he's clearly better defined, and he has sort of like an idea about what he is in terms of versus Picard and Riker and everything like that. Like, mm-hmm. you know, they do the show is not well written, but they do the clumsy metaphor of like he listens to classical music and Riker likes jazz, and therefore they're going to, you know, get into an argument about that. He goes a little bit too far when he's like, I like music with tempo and rhythm. It's like, what the fuck? Like, what kind of jazz,
you know,
is this guy listening to?
White people stuff.
But it's like they couldn't have just had a line about like, I'm not a fan of improv. I stick to what's expected of me. But they have him say ridiculous things like he doesn't like tempo or something. Shaw's issue is that he's a good example of what the modern Star Trek shows do, which is that he's set up as a villain, and I think he is set up as at least an antagonist, if not outright a villain, because of his antagonism towards Picard and Riker is over the top. But also, the show does not want you to take the understanding that he has a rational objection to what they're doing at all. It doesn't think that Shaw has a legitimate gripe with anything. It's very similar to Discovery, when someone would tell Burnham, are you fucking crazy? Don't do that. And then she would mm-hmm. do it and it would turn out all right. And they'd go, well, I've got egg all over my face for telling you not to do that insane shit that you just did. This show wants you to believe that Shaw is being a hindrance to Picard and Riker and he's being unfair towards them, when all that they've done is hatched a cockamamie plan to basically seize a starship from a captain.
Mm-hmm.
And go off and do this mission. And Seven betrays her captain too because she knows she's supposed to support the good guys in this show. And I don't think this show is ever going to get to a point where Shaw is like seen as a legitimate character who's saying, hey, old men, I'm not just going to go to the end of the fucking universe for you people. Sorry. Like, we have some rules here. And a better show would have an actual, like, there'd be a little bit of conflict about what Picard and Riker have done. But that's not this show, I don't think. How am I wrong about that, I guess? Or do you disagree?
I mean, we've seen him on screen for 5 minutes, so I can't really make that call. But yep. But I actually think that they set him up as... he's brusque about it, obviously, but I think the stuff that he says is all right. And I think that the fact that they set up Seven of Nine as someone who is bristling against Starfleet and probably wants to get fired, so she does the thing that she's not supposed to do anyway, I think that's all set up relatively reasonably well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say you're completely wrong, because obviously these shows don't have a great history of pulling that stuff off. But I think as it stands right now, I don't think that he is positioned as a villain as much as someone who is just giving them who is an impediment, who is not, he's an impediment without being evil about it. But it is still, he is still an antagonist without being a villain at this point.
Yeah. Why do Picard and Riker think that they can do this? Like, what's the...
I don't know. I mean, I guess they're just assume that they can lean into their... what's the word?
Their legend, basically?
I guess, in their... fuck.
They're like... Their
credibility and their rank and stuff like that.
Mm.
And I mean, he brings up that they try to do something stupid and he's like, yeah, well, you're retired and you're a captain and this isn't your ship.
Yeah.
So all of the reasons that he shuts them down are completely rational.
Yeah. What? Yeah, it's tough to avoid getting into the problems that I run into are that you start thinking about the plot a little bit too much. And it's like, so they chose a ship with an incredibly hard-ass captain just because Riker knows the ship, you know? Like,
yeah.
Why?
Well, I mean, I don't think he doesn't know the captain.
I know, but if you were to go off on this tangent, wouldn't you choose a ship that was someone you like either know or you are aware that they're not going to be a hard ass about this stuff? The reason that they go to the Titan is because Riker is the captain of the Titan in this universe, or he was
right.
The captain.
I think it's under the auspices of it seems less suspicious for him to be visiting the ship that he once captained or something.
Yeah, I guess I see.
And I mean, he obviously knows that Seven is number one on that ship, so he knows they have at least one ally on there. So.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know. I guess if you want to lead off, I suppose about like your favorability of it.
What? Just the other thing that was like, just from like a larger writing standpoint, it's like, yeah, I guess they could have chosen another ship with a less hard-ass captain, but then you have no conflict there.
No, and I get that, and that's why sort of picking on it doesn't make a lot of sense. But
yeah.
I guess the better place to approach it is that, like, what is the plan that they've hatched here? And the plan falls in line with the way that this series writes itself, which is that Riker says, I have a plan, and then they start kicking stuff off, and he slowly reveals what the plan is to you as it's going on. There's never a sequence where characters are going to talk about what they're about to do or do anything like that. So it's all this, like, here we're going to go here, we're going to do the Titan. I just feel like if you're going to do something that it's vitally important for you to get to this place, and you aren't supposed to involve Starfleet, why is he going to Starfleet to a ship that's incredibly difficult to get him to do what he needs it to do? Yeah,
it's the easiest way to get a starship.
Why don't they do the first season thing and get a freighter and just go out there and do something? He was explicitly told not to involve Starfleet in this because this is another thing. Starfleet's going to be evil for some reason in this season, and so they're going to be the cause of all this shit. So I don't know. I found the repetition that they're just doing the same thing over and over again.
I did notice that the setup was remarkably similar to the first season of its. Somebody calls Picard from his past, and then Picard needs to go get a ship and needs to go put a crew together to go figure out what's going on.
Yep. Laris gets on her knees in front of him, and I go, "What the hell? Oh, okay, she's just going to talk to him like that." It's incredibly the same. It's incredibly the same. I'm going to be fairly hostile to it just because I think that the one thing that's going on here is that this is a reference palooza, and I'm also a little bit, I've been talking too much, but like coming off of just in terms of the writing, we're doing Deadwood, obviously, at this point. This show does not think you're intelligent for watching it. It does not think the audience understands anything that's going on in it because characters will repeat what they've been saying, and it brings to mind the Swearingen quote of like, "Don't say to me in different fucking words what I just said to you," because it's like, what is the Picard beeping scene, right? Where's the communicator? And he's like, "Computer, what's that?" They're like, "It's a communicator." He's like, "Where is it?" He's like, and he starts digging through all of his old relic stuff, and he finds it, and he's talking to the computer about it. He's like, "What is this?" They're like, "Someone's sending you a message." He's like, "A message on my communicator?" They're like, "Yes." He's like, "It's got a codec. It's a message. I can't believe this is my old communicator." And after like 5 minutes, he just goes, "Why would someone send a coded message on an old communicator to me that I haven't used in 20 years?" And it's like, my God, you think we are incredibly stupid, Joe.
That scene did have an accurate depiction of what it's like to talk to an Alexa, though, because
at a
certain point, he asked a question, and it was like, The temperature outside is like, no, just shut up.
Yep. Have you get Alexa telling you, it's like, do you want to send a thank you to your driver? It asked me that every once in a while. It's like, no, that's fine.
You're getting a subspace codec sent to your old 20-year-old communicator. I've also noticed that based on your order history, it's time for you to reorder Dogs Well Dog Treats. Would you like me to do that for you?
I find the repetition of the dialogue and the way the characters repeat what they're doing is, it also just ties into the show continues to be unclear about who this is for. Is this for people who love Star Trek The Next Generation and don't need reminders about what is going on? Or is it for people who are clueless and need to be told through clunky exposition how everybody relates to everybody else and how they haven't seen each other in 20 years or whatever it is that's been going on?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question because like there's... I do think that communicator scene is a good example, though, because it's like, if you've ever watched an episode of Star Trek, as soon as you hear that noise, you know exactly what it is.
Right, yeah.
And so there's no reason for Picard to need to, like, talk it out. Like, you know, you just need him to find it and then pull it out.
Even if you don't know what it is, it's right, not hard to grok what's going on that thing. Yeah. I don't know. It's just.
I can understand consulting the computer about what exactly is being sent to it and stuff like that.
Oh, sure.
But because you know, obviously, the question is rational. Why is someone sending me a message on a 20-year-old communicator for a decommissioned destroyed ship?
Yep.
But yeah, I do think there's probably too much of that. There's the opening scene on Crusher's ship was interesting because at first I thought it was the villain's ship because obviously there were no lights on and I assumed that was where the bad guy stayed.
Sure.
And they're doing this pan through the room and they go past basically an iPad that's playing a captain's log from Picard.
Yeah, best of both worlds.
Yeah, and my first instinct was, okay, I guess we're just going right into the reference well here. But then my second thought was, you know, when has anybody in the history of Star Trek listened back to one of those logs?
Yeah.
They're always recording them. Nobody's listening to them. And so I was thinking, it's like, oh, is the bad guy getting information about Picard by listening to his logs? That's actually kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turned out it was Crusher's ship. And my thought was, wait, is she listening to Picard's logs like a podcast to fall asleep? Because that's basically what I do when I put on Star Trek and I can't sleep.
She's listening to the greatest hits, the best of both worlds.
Well, even that though, it was like, okay, I'm not sure why. I mean, maybe it comes up again later, but then I thought it was just a reference for the sake of a reference. But then the code that she gives Picard is that something that they actually did on the show?
It must be
that the virus myriad thing,
myriad codec or whatever it's called. Yeah,
like, I don't remember. Actually, That's kind of a clever callback,
yep.
If to use as a plot device, because it is something very specific to something that they did, and it forces him to have to consult somebody else on the ship because he obviously wasn't there when they did it.
Right. Yeah. When he was incapacitated. Yeah. Yeah. The things that I like about it are, I think Frakes is probably the MVP of it, really.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
At least, like, you know, the conversation between Riker and Picard at least feels like there's a little bit of something there. Frakes brings a levity to it that, like, no one else does for this stuff.
I will say, though, he is the bright spot pushing through the darkness of this modern Trek patina that's on everything. But even he is not immune to it.
No.
Because when he meets Picard in the bar, Picard gives him a sob story, and then his reaction is, yeah, my wife and kids don't really want to see me anymore at this point.
And I was like, what and the Picard fuck, gives man? Them a-
They were so happy in the first season. Why can't they just be happy? Like, is it not more interesting if it's like Riker decides to go on a mission despite his family, instead of he's
been staying
on the outs
with
Deanna again.
He's been staying at the Best Western down the street, and he needs somewhere to log shack up for free.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for having characters have problems and stuff, but have at least one person whose life isn't a mess.
Yeah,
but I mean, man, if you want to talk about bad writing, that scene with Raffi when she's buying drugs from the Orion guy.
Yep.
Oh boy, that was like. She sits down next to the couch and she's like, they kicked me out of Starfleet, my girlfriend left me, I'm hooked on drugs. I'm like, okay, thank you for catching us all up as to what I'm obviously it's a cover because she's undercover or whatever, but it's just like, if I was that Orion guy, I'd be like, baby, you're trying way too hard, you are a cop.
Although it's not really, it's true exposition, right? It's not true in the sense that she's not telling to this guy, but it's exactly what's happened to her. Yeah.
Well, I mean, she wasn't kicked out of Starfleet, I don't think. Well, is she back in Starfleet?
It's unclear because she's doing some sort of mysterious thing. So she might be.
I did roll my eyes real hard when they dropped the red lady on us. And I was like, what the fuck, man? Why does it have to be red?
Yep.
We had the red angel in Discovery. I mean, at least for the sake
red
of everybody,
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, for the sake of everybody, at least the Red Lady thing, they wrapped it up in the first episode by just blowing up that building, which even there was like, okay, I guess we're doing this again. We're going to kill
the weapon. You mean that Ralphie's chasing us?
Yeah, the super weapon, and they've hit us at home. That whole sequence felt so disconnected from it. Like, okay, so as far as like stuff that doesn't like track, right?
Mm.
When you have Raffi, she figures out the red lady thing, chooses not to contact her secret contact to tell this person that she's figured it out, but flies back to Earth, tries to communicate with people.
Sorry, I don't.
Oh, I don't know. I assumed it was because I assumed it was like Starfleet headquarters or something.
Oh, okay. I don't think it is, but I don't know enough to.
Well, counter, whatever
it is. Yeah.
Whatever it is, the
it's an outpost somewhere, if not Earth. Yeah.
Yeah. The computer person said find out what the red lady is, and so she did that.
Yep.
She didn't tell them what it was. She flies there and is ineffectual in watching this thing get destroyed. It's a big building that's got a huge-ass Starfleet sign on the top of it. How come out on the outer rim or whatever, the Titan doesn't get a message saying, come the fuck home. They just killed 10,000 people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I guess it's a small, I don't know, small thing. They were seeming to have trouble communicating too because they weren't answering Raffi. So I don't know if that was some sort of byproduct of the weapon and no one's going to know
that's
about
true.
It.
Yeah. It's possible. Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe, I don't know. It's a lot of extrapolating out that
it
maybe
isn't
fair, but it's like you think, well, you know, if Starfleet gets attacked, you'd think all the ships would know about it pretty quick. But
I think we're stuck at the first episode problem, right? Where we're going, maybe this is going to be explained at this, you know, like maybe there's an explanation that this weapon causes communication disruptions or something. But knowing the show, I wouldn't be surprised if that is not the case and we only realize it 5 episodes from now, right? Like we only start to realize where the problems are coming in terms of the plotting in that aspect. And like, I don't think this is outrageously badly plotted or anything. I think that the strengths of it are, and I can't remember if this is similar enough to the first episode of the other two seasons, is that they haven't added enough to the cake to ruin the recipe yet. So it's it's like fairly straight ahead. What I know is what is out there in terms of the narrative threads. It's really just Raffi and Picard are the two plots that are running in this one. Mm-hmm. So you don't have a lot of room to be like, oh, everything is sort of piling up and it's all going to be a problem. I think that it's just... what it has in simplicity, I think it lacks in any sort of like interesting content within their journeys to different places. So Picard and Riker don't really say anything interesting to each other at all the entire episode, which is, you know, they're just kind of getting to point A to point B. Raffi's undercover, figures out the plot of the weapon.
There was a refreshing number of sitting and talking scenes, though.
I suppose. I mean, there's the Shaw scene. The Shaw scene is my favorite just because of that, because it actually people like sat down and talked to each other. It does feel like it's a lot of just getting in motion to get to the place that's going to do the thing. Mm-hmm. And I wish that the show didn't do that quite as much as it tends to do. But I thought it was at least coherent the entire time to do that. I think that I'm in a tough place with the amount of callbacks in it, really. Like they're going to go great guns this season, it looks like, with this stuff. And you have these weird sequences of just like LaForge's daughter, who's called like drunk driver LaForge or whatever. It is.
You know what that scene, that scene reminded me of was, there's a clip going around. Are you familiar with the Fox News guy, Greg Gutfeld?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a clip going around of him telling this awful joke on one of those roundtable shows, right? Where I guess one of one of the women on the panel is very tall and he just goes, you know, you're real tall. I bet in school, I know what they called you. They call you Stilts. Was it Stilts? Did they call you Stilts? I bet it was Stilts. It's like, that's what it felt. It was like Riker going, crash LaForge, because you crashed the ship twice. That's why they call you Crash.
Yeah. Well, Riker will be on the red eye hour if that show still exists with Gutfeld. Was her name something like Stiltskin or something like that? Like, was the actress?
I actually have no idea, okay. But it was just like... it was like bombing to a room of four friends and not understanding that it was going poorly.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't know. I feel like I had a lot to say about this episode.
Sorry, I got to go back to the red lady thing. When she pulls up, when she figures out what it is and pulls out that picture of an ugly ass giant fucking red statue, I was like, what? Who they're gonna dedicate this thing? This is the ugliest statue I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah,
and I live in Boston, where that Martin Luther King thing.
Yeah,
is.
Oh yeah, the penis statue. It's a good statue. Why can't? Here's a thing to sculptors: just sculpt something that looks like the fucking thing that we're supposed to be doing. Don't go crazy with it.
You know, people do art in different ways. Oh, it doesn't have to all be completely representative of the subject.
It does. It absolutely does.
The sculptor was trying to represent a certain very specific moment between mm-hmm. two people, and he maybe didn't look at it from every angle. But I mean, it's not new for Boston, because there's that witch finder statue in Salem that when you look at it from the right angle, it looks like he's grabbing a gigantic dick. So
yeah, Worcester has the turtle boy statue. It looks like a little kid is just fucking a turtle from behind,
nice.
Which is nice. a great classy thing that says welcome to Worcester. My favorite thing about it's all these little details. My favorite thing about the Raffi, where she is talking to Worf, I have to assume, who's like AI that she's talking to, because it says you're a warrior. She said she's like, you don't know how hard it is out there. And the thing goes back, I do know, actually. And it pulls up a record and says, like, severe drug addict. And it pulls it up and shows it to her. And she goes, wow, you sure know a lot about me for a secret handler. It's like, what the fuck else is a secret handler supposed to know?
That's because I wrote the show and people need to be remembered how fucked up you are.
My God. Like, why? It's in your record. It's the only character trait we know about you. Why wouldn't your handler know that you are a drug addict?
So I think that they are in that moment. I think they are trying to walk a line, because I think there are probably, although maybe not, I don't know. Mm. I think they're probably thinking, all right, this is Star Trek The Next Generation Season 8. There are people who may not have watched seasons 1 and 2 of this show who are fans who are specifically coming back for this. There are people who are Fairweather fans who might be coming back just specifically because it's a TNG thing.
Yeah.
So we do need to catch some people up on these new characters who've been around for 2 seasons, because we know they ain't going to fucking watch seasons 1 and 2 before they do it.
Yeah. That's,
it was incredibly clumsy, but whatever.
I guess it's like it. Well, that's understandable. That actually makes me respect the show less, you know, because it's like, because when you're accommodating to that degree, it means that I know that they have no faith in the first 2 seasons of this, but like to just sort of like abandon it and be like, yeah, the first 2 basically didn't exist. And so we know we're getting this influx of new viewers, so we should just explain this to everybody again. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you're not really, it's not great art or anything, but it's just the show is not. The show, my problem with it is that the show is clearly just a product at this point. And this season's even more egregious than the first 2, I think, in the way that they, just these things about like, Riker's talking about like Guinan's hawking like starship memorabilia or something. And, mm-hmm. you know, he's like, who wants a fat one? And the bartender says, I don't want the fat one.
But Wes, he's talking about himself, not the ship.
It's just
metaphor.
I don't know. It's just it feels weird to me. Maybe I'll settle into the season and things will change. But at this point, it just feels. I'm really. I think my biggest criticism, and I apologize for talking so much, is that it all feels very repetitive to me. Like the enemy ship looks like the Star Trek 09 ship, basically. It's spiky.
More or less, yeah.
Same idea. The plot is reminiscent of getting off the ground in the first season of Picard. I don't know how many times we can watch a starship leave space dock with swelling music and expect it to mean anything anymore.
I don't know. It works every time for me.
Does it work? It doesn't work.
As long as the ship looks cool, I'm here for it. Like I was actually wondering about that, because I'm looking at the Titan and I'm thinking
Neo-Constitution.
Okay, yeah. I'm thinking this feels like a very retro design. This feels like a original series movie era design.
Yeah.
It feels more in line with the 2009 Enterprise than it does anything that they've done recently. And I don't remember what the Titan looks like because the Titan showed up in season 1, right? Because that was the one ship that they copy and pasted at the end. And I don't think it looks like this, does it?
I don't think it looks that different from this. It's the same general idea, I think. Let me see. Who's the Titan? I feel it's maybe not as it doesn't have here. I'll copy this. I'm gonna send this to you.
Okay.
It's a little bit squatter, I guess would be the way to describe it. It doesn't have the upward facing nacelles.
Okay, yeah, that feels more like a post TNG design.
This picture I just sent you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas the one in the new one feels a lot more like retro. It feels more like the original Enterprise than it does anything newer.
Yeah, I mean they call it, you know, just so you don't miss that, they call it a Neo Constitution. They don't even give it a new name. They just reference something that you're going to understand.
Yeah. I like the design. I mean, it got me. I mean, the things that I care about in Star Trek, they got me in this because I like the ship. I like I think they've dialed in the uniforms nicely.
Yeah.
Because it's I like the black. I like the Deep Space Nine color scheme where it's the black in the bottom and the color on top. But mm-hmm. they actually added the Lower Decks split.
Right.
So it opens up from the side like the Lower Decks uniforms does. The only thing is, and I know they're matching the style of the rest of the show, but they're so fucking dark. Like when they're talking to Seven of Nine on the bridge, I thought she was wearing all black mm-hmm. because the red is so deep.
Right.
Which is strange because the yellow stands out pretty well, but the red is just like this deep burgundy red that does not really pop. Mm-hmm. I don't think anything's really designed to pop in this show, but God forbid.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough to hide the yellow, I guess. I don't know if we saw a blue color, but
no blue. Yeah. No blue. Actually, I don't hold on. I just saw a picture. Yes, there were some blue in that when they welcomed them to the ship.
Yeah.
There's a couple, and even the blue's pretty dark as well. It's like a darker teal color.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I like the design. I like the pin. Yeah, this uniforms look good. Ship looks good. That's all I care about.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what else to talk about. It's one of those things. I feel like there's a lot there, but I don't know where it's going to be really. Although I just have like my feelings about it are entirely based on where I think it's going to go, because I don't think this is going mm-hmm. to surprise us really at all.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel, I don't know how I feel about it. Like I like Frakes. I still don't feel like Stewart doesn't feel like Picard to me really. And it might just be
The scene where they're in the bunk beds, there was a part where Picard was talking and his voice was, the timbre of his voice was so low and old.
Yeah, weak.
I hate to put it that way. He almost sounded like a robot.
Mm-hmm.
Like it had this weird like timbre to it. And I was kind of thinking, like, are they leaning into the fact that he's a robot person here? Which I don't think that they were, but it's so strange to hear him sound so old.
Yes.
And I mean, I assume, is that just how he is in real life? I haven't seen him outside of the show. Is that how he sounds?
He just can't lay down and talk, I don't think. That's hard for...
He's not playing older than he is. This is just him.
He seems pretty... He's old at this point, you know? He's an old guy. Shatner's aged better than Stewart has. Shatner's like 150 years old and he looks great. So, I don't know.
That's true.
The context of that bunk scene was funny. Because Picard is talking about, like, I haven't seen Beverly Crusher in 20 years. And then it cuts back up to Frakes on top. I expected the bunks to start shaking, you know, as this awkward moment where they're sharing this this cabin or whatever. But it's like, just the whole Crusher and Picard thing is funny too. Like they as you're saying, they have to do this exposition thing. So Laris is like, you wanted to bone her, didn't you, Picard? And he's like, oh, I did, Laris. Like, we had a relationship. It's like, well, you know. Who's up for subtlety?
I was expecting this is the kind of writing that they do on Star Trek now, so I was surprised that they didn't make this joke. But Picard's like, I haven't seen her in 25 years. We didn't end on great terms. And then when they're walking around on the ship, they hear the music playing, and Riker's like, what is that? And Picard's like, oh, it's part of a compilation that I made for Beverly for blah, 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 blah. I 100% Riker, I thought Riker was going to take a beat and go, you made her a mixtape?
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of joke that they do in the show now. But
it didn't even, yeah, he just made her.
That's why she didn't call you back, Jean-Luc. You made her a mixtape. It was Beethoven, my favorite Chopin, and My Chemical Romance.
My Bloody Valentine, Clay, get your plug in.
Have you ever heard of the plain white tees?
Will, this is the good part. Let's sit down and listen to this part right here. Take him to the bridge.
Will, one of my favorite songs I put on there is by a group called the Ben Folds Five. They're actually only three men. It's hilarious. It's called Brick, and it's about abortion.
What is that? Is that Parks and Rec joke? This is my favorite song about the industrialized meat industry or something like that. But the when they have the second Ron comes onto the show.
Yeah.
I don't know. So you're more positive on this than I am, I think.
I'm trying not to be cynical about until get a bigger sample. I don't, you're being pretty cynical about it.
I understand
where you're coming from, but I'm leaving myself open to get a bigger sample size before I really come down on it.
Yeah. And
because I will say that there's a lot of elements that do feel recycled in as far as like structure and a lot of the look and stuff like that, but the dialogue is clunky, but I don't want to storyline wise cut it off at the knees before they, you know, they get the chance to tell the story.
Yeah.
Which is what I try to do with every season, every time we go into a new season of these new shows. But
yeah, my embarrassment at this point would be, you fooled me once, shame on you. You fooled me twice, shame on me. If you fool me a third time, I'm just a fucking idiot, right?
Never get fooled, won't get fooled again.
Yeah, I won't get fooled
again. As the president
said. As Mr. Bush would say. Like, I'm all for a fair shake, I suppose. And I'll give the show a fair shake, I think. But at a certain point, I feel that I would look ridiculous not seeing these same things and thinking things are going to be different this time.
Sure. Yeah.
What I think is going to happen is that I think that the nostalgic thing that you're talking about, which is that they're trying to draw people in to watch this third season, is going to give this season a false historical memory of being much better than it's going to be, which is a lot of predictions about what's going on. But I'm deeply unsettled by, like, for instance, the reviews on this one, right, are either people love it or they go, this is the same shit that they've been giving us for 3 years now. And yeah. I personally think that the this is the same shit argument seems much stronger, because all of the positives about it seem to come down to people who really love the reference stuff that's going on in it, and who really love the fact that the characters are returning. They got rid of all the new characters that people didn't like. And as far as I can tell, that's it. Because there's nothing... Who's that blowhard, that Robert Bernard Myers or whatever that guy's name is? He was saying... He had some clip that was saying the first scene of this is going to have you going, this is Star Trek The Next Generation, Beverly Crusher is running around with a fucking plasma rifle in the first scene.
Maybe he meant specifically the scene where we're just listening to dialogue from 30 years ago.
Maybe. Maybe he fell asleep, or maybe he just orgasmed and left the room at that point after he heard that.
Maybe he hit the wrong button on the remote and actually played an episode of The Next Generation.
I don't think I'm misquoting him. I think he filmed some absurd YouTube short where he spoke dramatically into the camera saying that you're going to love this the moment you see it, set your eyes on it. And all I've seen is Frakes. That's the only thing that makes me go, this is kind of fun. This will be something enjoyable. But the rest of it is all the same stuff that I've seen before. And I'm willing to be proven wrong here. Hopefully the show proves me wrong. But there's only so many times you can set up a plot with a galaxy-threatening weapon that is the Portal gun from the Portal video game series. And
which was kind of I didn't know what was going on, but then when I figured it out, I was like, oh, that's kind of awesome.
I thought that the portal gun was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. I thought that the overdone scream sound effect was too much. It was like people were screaming as it was pouring stuff out of the game.
That was kind of weird. Yeah,
it sounded like ants screaming or something, and it went on for a little bit too long, but. I just see I've seen what this villain looks like in the teaser. I've seen Rafi's drug addiction storyline thing come back. I've heard this exposition dialogue that they're doing, and I don't see how you can possibly change it from what it was. It all feels very similar to me. That's all.
Yeah, it's tough, right? Because it's never going to be TNG.
Right, correct, yeah.
Just by I don't even mean that like by a time-space standpoint, but I mean like just the structure, they're not going to all of a sudden change the show back to, so it matches like structurally and tonally with that.
Correct, because it's too jarring to do that at this point.
Right. So You kind of have to accept that it's going to be a continuation in that sense of what they've been doing. And the thing is it's like, I don't know where the bar is for a season like this, honestly, because the first two seasons were trying to do something new to a certain extent, while arguably relying too much on old stuff to get them over the finish line there.
Yep.
But this one, this is like, it's more of a victory lap kind of show.
Yes.
Where it's like, getting the guys back together, you're probably going to, makes the similar jokes and the same kind of reference. Like, so it's, I feel like they're kind of, this sort of show is built more for that. But at the same time, it's like, I mean, they never did that in the movies. You know, like they never, it's not like in Star Trek Nemesis, they were dropping references to the show left and right. I mean, well, maybe they were, I don't remember, but I don't think they were.
No, because they were still of that era, you know? Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's tough because I don't really know what the bar is for this. I've been very fascinated by how drastically the people who were so anti or so negative on the first two seasons have come around so hard on this.
Yes.
And to be fair, a lot of those people have seen six episodes and we've only seen the first one.
Yeah.
So that also plays into it. But I'm kind of, that's what I'm more interested in, because like at the end of the day, if we get to the end of it and we go, yeah, it was kind of basically more of the same, like that doesn't really even bother me anymore, because it's like my bar starts there.
Yeah.
For like what I expect from this.
Yeah.
And so if that's the bar they hit, it's like, yeah, okay, whatever. Sure, I guess put it on the pile with all the other ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so many people seem to be claiming that it's different and it's better than that. And so I'm more curious to be like, okay, all right, let's see what you can do. Let's see what is it that's making everybody turn so hard in the positive direction.
Did you
for something that, like, as far as the internet goes,
yeah,
in this day and age, should be nothing but scorn from these people. You know what I mean? Like, this is the kind of thing where
it's true.
Usually something like this, with as many references and stuff like that, is just going to get dunked on. But the people who do the dunking usually are the ones who really like it. And so it's kind of confusing me in that way. And I'm not really sure what's going on there. But again, only seen the first episode.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe Cybok shows up next episode and it gets great. I don't know.
Well, but, did you end up reading Darren's review of it? I haven't
trying not to read through. I've read like one or two of them. I think I read one positive and I think I read one of the ones that was more negative. I can't remember, but
yeah,
I've just seen a lot of people saying like, oh yeah, this guy usually hates the show and he really liked it, that kind of stuff.
Yes. I've seen a lot of that too. Although I don't know, because I guess it's an interesting sort of clash of our own personalities about whether or not what this is going to bother us. Because you were just saying that, like, if it ends up being the same thing as what it has been, it's just another bad season of Star Trek to put on the pile.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I would feel a lot worse about this if this was the first season and it sucked. Like, yep. if they came out of the gate with we're getting the crew back together and then it was like the bottom feeder garbage of season one and season two, I would be a lot more upset. But by this point, I'm just like, yeah, you know, my expectations for this show are so low that if it sucks, then I don't ever have to think about it again. And I can just go back and watch the stuff that I like.
Yes. I don't disagree with that, I don't think. I would also, like, I guess my reticence of doing that is that it's such a lot of TV to consume, and it sucks. You know, to go back, I wish I could go back and not have wasted 20 hours of like a day of my life watching the first two seasons. You know what I mean? Like, that's when you start adding it up, you start to go like, what a waste of time. So my entire drive for it to be good is that I think it's just a harbinger of where, like, modern television is in a lot of ways too. It's not even really just like a Star Trek problem at this point, but it's like they're just, you know, we're forced to watch it because it's a Star Trek podcast, and so we watch Star Trek stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But now that the franchise has moved into the modern sensibility of it, which is that we have a franchise and we have to desperately try to find what will keep people coming back to watch this thing that we've got.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what we're going to do here is we tried to do something different, but it was a colossal failure. So let's just bring back everyone that we know and we'll get all the familiar faces. And I think that makes me upset just because it's like so wildly insulting to the audience that's watching it. And I think that that kind of stuff feeds into the plot and the writing that they do here, which is that it's just a string of you elbowing the person next to you saying, did you get that? Did you get that reference? And there's only so many references like that they can string together before I start going like, why not just have ChatGPT write this fucking shit then, you know?
Right, yeah.
Where's the humanity in any of this? You're just giving us stuff that we know we're going to expect, and you're pulling random Wikipedia facts. Just have ChatGPT. They'll probably write a better fucking story than this. Just do that and just give up on trying to make this about something or like have a human experience or like, God forbid, like feel something as you watch these shows. Yeah. I just haven't felt any of that. It all rides on the feelings, and I think that a lot of the YouTubers who like it now were claiming to have problems with the plot of the first two seasons and stuff like that and the acting and the decisions, but all they really wanted was the warm hug of the nostalgia that they weren't getting. And
right,
if they're given it, they will overlook all the other problems.
Yeah.
So I just find it kind of sad. Like, I watch it and Stewart's old. Star Trek is old.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, maybe they were just at this point in our Star Trek careers. But I just, I would be so shocked if there was just some sort of like really different, interesting take from a Star Trek episode. And it just, and it wasn't just repetition of stuff we've seen before with a different gleam or gloss on it.
I was going to make an incendiary comment about,
go for it.
What you're saying about why the haters like this one might say about what they actually want out of a Star Wars movie. But I'll keep that to myself.
is that an incendiary comment on me for liking the movie?
No.
Oh, okay.
Good. No. It's because I mean I'm probably on the fence about that movie more than I dislike it.
Oh, sure.
It's the kind of thing where it's like, yeah, okay. I mean, you know, this is what you want. I mean, what do you want out of a Star Wars movie?
Yeah.
Anyway, I won't get into that.
You know, well, let's end it with I've been watching the kids. Really like lightsaber fights to watch.
Yeah, because they're fucking great.
Yeah, they don't like the Star Wars movies. Interestingly, they're like, this is incredibly boring. But they will have me just put on the YouTube thing about the shows like every lightsaber fight, and they watch that. And I think we should do a Patreon special about the Obi-Wan Anakin, was it Mustafar fight?
Oh, from Revenge of the Sith?
That is the worst piece of cinema.
Terrible. It's so dumb.
And I've watched it 1,000 times now. I'm like an expert on how awful it is.
Like that is sort of kind of not entirely dissimilar to what you're saying about this and kind of what I'm thinking as well. Because it's like that fight is just such like, you want your fucking fight here, choke on it. Have all the lightsaber fight in the world. And it's like it to the point where I feel so cynical watching that because it's just like, I understand what you're trying to do here, but it's just too much. Like there's no, it's just pouring gravy on top of the potatoes until there's nothing left.
Washing those potatoes away.
Yeah. But you know, as far as this show goes, right? Yeah. Like the thing I'm kind of surprised about a little bit is they're going so far out of their way to jettison the first two seasons. Why didn't they do that stylistically across the board? Why didn't they just go like, all right?
Oh, it's counter to your original point of like, you can't change at this point. Why not make a change?
Well, not like just like the way it looks.
Yeah.
You know, like it looks like the other two seasons of the show,
yes,
which means it's dark and depressing. Why not change the way it looks? Put a couple lights on the fucking bridge and like change it that way. And because it feels so weirdly mashed together to me. Where it's like we're kind of trying to do this thing that's closer to what people recognize from TNG.
Yeah, sorry. Where are you? I know we're late in the podcast, but I should have brought this up earlier. Where are you getting that tone from? I guess because I would say that the tone of this one is...
I think you're right. I think it's all Frakes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think. I mean, he's like the driving force of that. Like everything else is pretty consistent.
Okay.
With how the show is, how the new Trek shows are.
Because all the backstory that we've heard about people has been very doom and gloomy about them.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think it's going to be a sad season again.
I fucking hope not.
Riker's getting a divorce. Like he's in the middle of a divorce.
Yeah, I don't know.
Crusher's been out there doing something.
That's part of it, right? I think that's what I'm kind of getting at. Like you've got Riker who's acting like Riker, at least acting like the modern cultural idea of what Riker was.
An older version of Riker, I think, is a good description. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I don't think that he's acting out of character. Let's put it that way.
No.
But that character just doesn't. And so he's like bringing a bit of levity and charisma into this sorrow vacuum.
Yes.
And it's like he's the only person in color constantly walking around in a black and white movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know why they didn't try to just like shift away from this dreariness and embrace the TNG thing, like the look of it. I'm not saying it needs to go. I don't want it to look exactly like the show.
Right. To have just lights everywhere. Ago. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not what I mean. But It's just like, if they're going to jettison everything else, why not reconceptualize what the show looks like visually and maybe, I don't know, make it a little bit more appealing and less depressing visually to look at?
No, I just think they're in a rut with this stuff. This is just like, they know this is what they do. Because I could see, if your final season Picard, have Picard go out and he gets on the Titan or whatever, and it's basically 10 episodes of finishing out the character stories that we know and going on like an adventure each week. And like not some doomsday weapon with some megalomaniacal villain that we're going to run into. Not endless tears about stuff. Not meeting Jack Crusher II or something like that.
He's a new character, right?
Yeah, he's Wesley's better half, I suppose.
Are we supposed to think that this is Picard's son?
I think that's the implication.
Because you could tell because he's British.
Yes,
exactly. Because everyone knows you inherit your accent, yes.
Yeah, they don't call him Jack, but he is been confirmed his name is Jack Crusher. So
yeah. I don't, you know, one thing I did want to mention is I know one of the lines that gets that got pulled out by detractors of the show was when Shaw makes the crack about we don't go around blowing things up, which I'm sure is depressing to you guys or something like that, implying that they are, that Riker and Picard are
cowboy
gunslingers. And it's like, that's not what Star Trek was about. I was like, whatever. But it kind of was, to a certain extent. Like, watching Star Trek, they're blowing a lot of shit up. Mm-hmm. I think the problem is that line is being fed through this modern Trek filter, which recasts them as gunslingers, when that's not really what they were like. They did blow a lot of stuff up, though. So it's like, it's a weird kind of thing where it's like not...
Well, I think he's totally wrong, right? To imply that Picard is not someone who is like extremely regimented and regulated during his career.
Yeah. It's I think he's wrong. I think he's wrong in that sense, but like it's a weird way to play it, because they did go on a bunch of adventures where they did blow stuff up, but they weren't like, you know, flying around with their seatbelts off. You know, they were very regimented. So it's a weird line to put in there, and to have them kind of look at each other. It's just, like, I don't know. I feel like that's getting amplified by the vibe of the show, which is recasting a lot of stuff in that sense. And I don't really know why they need to do that.
Yeah. I forgot to mention it, but I would have pulled out that line as a fundamental misunderstanding of where the characters are supposed to be in, like, because I think it's easy, like, I think what's so frustrating about the Shaw scene is that Shaw is very easily capable of being written as a great impediment to these two. And the way that they set him up is pretty good. It's just that he has a couple qualities that annoy me. One being that thing where he seems to not completely understand Picard and Riker, because he seems to describe them incorrectly. But also he's also kind of needlessly cruel in a few scenes for no particularly good reason. He has this sort of like, because he's the minute that they get on the ship, he's antagonistic towards them. And I don't really know why that's done, except for just pace necessity, that he needs to be immediately upset with them. He's kind of insulting to Riker about Jazz and stuff, and maybe this is the sort of the way that the character is going to be described, but I just think that he could have been written in a way that he is a sympathetic character, that you understand where his point of view is coming from, and he accurately understands what these characters in this show are doing.
Yeah.
Right? And he's not, because he's basing his entire understanding of them on the TNG days, but that doesn't apply to this. If he had said, listen, Picard, I heard what you did last year with the Soong droids, and I heard that you
that's true.
You know? Like, bring that shit up.
That's a more apt reference to make. Yeah. It honestly feels like a line that would fit better for Kirk, because if you had old man Kirk on that ship, I of course would be like, listen, Kirk, you've stolen a starship more than once, so
I'll keep my eyes on you, buddy. Yes, exactly.
But listen, we're not going searching for Shangri-La here, buddy. I got to be back in time for Celebration Day or whatever the fuck they're doing.
Yeah, that's it. Well,
speaking of all the things that they've pulled out of the toy chest across all of the modern Star Trek, I still cannot believe that they have not figured out a way to get William Shatner involved somehow
in the modern shows.
Yeah, I don't. I assume that they have driven a dump truck full of money up to his house.
Yeah, it's him.
And he just. It must be.
Yeah,
like I can't imagine that they haven't tried, because like, I don't know. Like even, I don't know how you would do it. What it would be, but like. Especially, I'm surprised that there's not someone at his house every other day being like, have you seen what they did to Mark Hamill in the Mandalorian show? Have you seen those clips from the Indiana Jones movie?
Yeah.
Will, we can make you look young again, buddy. Yeah. Just come in here and give us, you don't even have to, listen, the technology's so good, you don't even have to record your lines. We can just make the robot sound like you. You just have to sign off on letting us use your face.
Give us the rights to your face, please. That's all we want. Yeah.
And I'm sure he's like, listen, I'll do it as long as I get to punch Leonard Nimoy in the face and kick George Takei in the balls.
Yeah. Well, good on you, Bill Shatner. You can do what you need to do. All right, I guess we're done with this one. I was fairly negative on it. Clay was a little bit more positive. But we'll see where the season goes with Picard's third season. I think this is the last question. Do you think this is the final season, if it does well?
Oh, I have to assume, yes.
Yeah.
I can't imagine they're... this was shot like 3 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, this was shot concurrently with the second, I think.
Yeah, yeah. That's been at least... a year, 2 years. I don't know how long it's been.
Yeah,
I have to imagine this is it. Here's a question. What if it's not? What if, let's say, the breakout character from this show is like Geordi, doing whatever he's doing, or Worf. Let's say it's Worf.
Could be Worf.
Would you be? I mean, how would you feel if they were like, we're going to do a new show? It's going to be Worf leading. Section 31 or whatever the fuck he's doing.
I'm already upset because the ending to Worf's character on DS9, where he becomes an ambassador between Kronos and Earth, is a perfect ending for him.
Yeah.
And now he's like a ninja or something. So I don't know. I'm already a little bit upset that the perfect ending for the Worf character, which is a man between two worlds, gets a job in retirement that like bridges the gap between those two worlds.
Yeah.
And now he's running Section 31, sending ChatGPT messages to Raffi, knowing that she's a drug addict or something like that. So I don't know. We'll see. But we got a lot of characters left. We got Geordi. We got Data, or one of the Soon siblings, or whatever it is. We got Troy. We've got Worf to show up. We got a lot of stuff to come on. Yeah, that's it. Thanks, everybody.
I'm curious how they're going to justify needing them to stick around, because I assume they're going to.
I saw one review that says one of them gets a very obvious short shrift. Like one of them just kind of shows up and doesn't have anything to do. But I don't know who that is.
Is it the rest of them in a car? Driving down the street, and then someone goes, is that Deanna Troi?
It's got to be Troi, right? It's got to be Troi who gets
I have to assume it probably is, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. All right, guys, we're done. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you for supporting all of this stuff. Thank you for listening to our Picard coverage. Let us know what you thought. The Discord seems to be fairly positive on it, so we'll see. I might be wrong. Hopefully, I'm wrong. But thanks for listening anyway. Clay, do you have anything you want to say before we go?
Not particularly. Keep checking out what we're doing on Patreon for Rotten Horror Picture Show. doing some video nasties, getting goopy, bloody disgusting with it. So join us over there.
Check out the Deadwood podcast. If you guys haven't checked that out yet, check out Deadwood. It's a good show. That's it.
It is a good show.
It is a good show. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next week with... Do you know what the next episode is called, Clay?
To boldly go?
Disengage.
Ah.
Yeah.
Is it going to be a rap battle?
How many of the episode titles are going to be puns on TNG phrases and titles?
If it were me writing them, all of them.
All of them. I'm going to go 8 out of 10, I think. That'll be my guess. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Hope you enjoyed Picard Season 3, Episode 1. We'll see you next week.